Now, Stigma of Mental Illness Radio on CosmicBroadcasting.com and the Cosmic Broadcasting app.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about
good afternoon. You're listening to the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. My name is Chrissy Hodges, and I am your host here at CosmicBroadcasting.com. I am not going to start today with my normal ramblings, even though I do have a lot of things I would like to talk about, as usual, that have happened in the last week. However, my guest today, I have a feeling we're going to need every single inch of the hour to talk. Now, I've been told by Ethan that there are some rules that I have to follow and things that I can't say, or he's going to make fun of me.
You can't even say that.
So,
you just failed.
We are going to, and I think he has an intro somewhere that I'm supposed to be reading, and I have failed it yet again, and I had not even going to look that up. So let's just go ahead. Let me do my own personal intro, and then Ethan can tell what he wants. Ethan Smith is a friend of a just recent friend of mine, and
you've actually never met ever personally.
I have never met him, and we, for some reason, missed a ginormous opportunity to meet. We have all the same friends in the OCD community. Ethan did the International OCD Foundation keynote last year, which I decided for some reason I was going to sleep in that morning and then go for a run instead of go listen to him talk. I'm going to tell you, that run was phenomenal. Mm. And so Ethan contacted me a few weeks, maybe a month and a half or so later, I think mainly just to harass me about the fact that I never heard the keynote. Since then, I have watched it two times, not just once, but twice. I have it memorized, and it's constantly playing as a background whenever I have free time. So,
we're reshooting it in 3D. It's going to be amazing.
Ethan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Would you like to do your own introduction now? Who are you, Ethan?
I am a writer, director, producer, and as of late, a very big OCD advocate. I was born with OCD, and I've had it my whole life, and but only recently have been able to live like like everyone else, you know, have a beautiful life in the last 3 years and start to build the building blocks of what's become a lovely existence.
And what led up to that? We need to start with your story. Now, I know you want me to kind of prompt you with some questions, but I want to give the listeners a feel of who you are and what, and definitely include as much about your symptoms and what OCD looks like for you.
Tell your story in 5 minutes or less.
This is Chrissy Talks, not TED Talks.
Sorry. Well, I was born with OCD. As a kid, I had very, very classic symptoms. I would count, I would check, I would do tons and tons of compulsions. I was afraid of throwing up, afraid of getting sick. So anything that I could do to make myself feel more comfortable and get rid of the anxiety, I would do. My parents definitely knew something was up, something that wasn't normal. But, you know, it was the early 80s, and you know, OCD wasn't as much in the social consciousness of the way it is now. As I got older, you know, they thought I was quirky and was different. But again, you know, nothing specific. But I really started struggling in high school. I started having panic attacks. I started being afraid that I was sick. I had a brain tumor. I was dizzy all the time. I was taking my temperature upwards of 60 times a day. And so my parents took me to a psychologist. And they immediately diagnosed me as having OCD. Well, that was fine and good, except that they had absolutely no clue how to treat it. Or they thought they knew how to treat it, but you know, as we so often learn, they really don't. So we sat there and we talked about how I can be stronger and how I can just not think those thoughts. And so that went on. Late teens, I went to college, lasted 3 months. The newness wore off, or the honeymoon period, as I like to call it. And from there, I was deathly afraid that I was going to die and couldn't make it without my parents, and went back home. Throughout my 20s, I worked as an actor. TV, movies, you've probably seen me, or maybe you haven't. I don't know. It depends if you have HBO, Showtime. Well, I don't know. It's so many. That was a joke, Chrissy.
I didn't know whether to laugh or not.
I wanted you to laugh, because otherwise I sound like really arrogant and pompous. But my 20s were really, really difficult. Stop. My 20s were really difficult. I couldn't leave my parents' side. I was scared to go.
I'd like to interject here, by the way. In Ethan's keynote, he actually had to say in the keynote, it's okay for y'all to laugh. And I was laughing, not even knowing when I was watching it, not even knowing if anybody else was laughing. But
what Chrissy means is, in the video that she saw, because she wasn't at the keynote, I said it was okay to laugh. Go on. What were you saying?
And that's all I wanted to say.
No. So, you know, what happens is OCD gets really small. Your world gets really small. And as I went through my 20s, yes, I was functioning, but I was miserable. I didn't know happiness. I was still taking my temperature upwards of gazillion times a day. I couldn't travel without my parents. They couldn't travel without me. I mean, you know, I wouldn't let them travel without me. And then in the end of 2009 is sort of when it all came to a head. And through a series of events, I got unbelievably sick to the point where my symptoms changed, and I was afraid of self-harm, and I was afraid of hurting myself, and afraid of bashing my head in, and afraid of drinking Clorox and Windex. I would have had a very clean body. And I was to the point where I was bedridden. I was bedridden in my parents' guest bedroom, and I would lay on my hands 24/7. I would tie them up in the elastic of my underwear and lay on my hands so I wouldn't hurt myself. I was afraid of my hands. I was afraid that thought equaled action, and if I thought I was going to hurt myself, then I was going to hurt myself, and then I couldn't remember if I hurt myself, so then I wanted to go to the hospital and get CAT scans, and I started doing that. In fact, 1 week I had 4 or 5 CAT scans in 1 week, which isn't that good. I glow in the dark now, and the ladies like that, but other than that, you can laugh at that. Well, you know, don't. No, sorry.
I chuckled.
You chuckled. And so that's my OCD, you know, in a nutshell. Treatment for me was hell, but necessary. I did intensive outpatient for 8 months, 5 sessions, 5 days a week. 5 sessions a day, 5 days a week. I went to the OCD Institute for 2.5 months. I got kicked out of the OCD Institute for staging a magnificent stunt so I could get to the hospital and get a CAT scan. I then got kicked out of the OCD Institute, told I couldn't go back to Florida, my home, to be with my parents, and I ended up living in a crack house in Boston where I was just basically told, learn to live. Just learn to live, learn to function on the streets. And they continued to give me outpatient therapy 3 days a week, and it was the middle of winter in Boston in 2011. And slowly but surely, life and survival became more important than my OCD, and I started getting better. And then August of 2011, I moved to LA, and the rest is history.
There's a couple things that I want to address here, and that was under 5 minutes, so thank you for adhering to the Chrissy Talks minimum. Ethan and I both share a passion for, and when Ro Vitale was on a few weeks ago, the same thing, for communicating the truth about how OCD is not a joke. Now, you know, I almost referred to myself as a third person. I get very riled up when I read articles or when I'm reading an article about something or someone, and all of a sudden they refer to them as they're so OCD about something. I get extraordinarily riled up, especially if I go down to the Yahoo comments. But I think that one of the things that you said made me think, Ethan, you mentioned that you at one point you were bedridden with your OCD. At the lowest point in my life, I could not leave the house. I mean, it was, and this is not because, this is because I couldn't, and it's because I didn't want to. It was almost like I was living inside this tiny little hole, and the only option for me was suicide. And so I think one of the messages that we are trying to convey is OCD is not a funny, quirky, cool thing to do, a cool thing to be. Is that right, Ethan?
Yeah, I mean, my sentiment's exactly tenfold. The thing is, I think that, well, first of all, I mean, we can talk about Hollywood and the media and how it portrays OCD, and I wrote an article about it actually for OCD Awareness Week, and you know how they make it look cool. It, you know, like Monk, it's a superpower. He can solve all kinds of mysteries using his powers of deduction and his OCD. But just like any other disease, there are different levels of it. And while, you know, the media and news and Hollywood are real good at letting people know about the very, very mild, quirky cases of OCD where it's a little annoying, but at the end of the day, I have a real clean house, or I invented something, or, you know, Hugh Hefner, not Hugh Hefner, wrong conversation, Howard Hughes.
Are we referring to your Wild Things 4?
Wait, shush. So Howard Hughes, for instance, you know, if we only heard about Howard Hughes the billionaire and Howard Hughes the plane and the money, and oh, by the way, he had OCD. Well, that sounds kind of neat, you know, but the story of Howard Hughes has been told, and we later hear about his reclusive behavior and eventually never cutting his fingernails, never cutting his toenails, and, you know, not leaving his house. So the reality is, just like any other disease, and let me get it straight, OCD is absolutely 100% a disease. It is not a decision. It's a disease.
Mm-hmm.
There are different
Good
levels
point.
Of it. And the truth of the matter is, in regards to OCD, is that it's amazing the power of the mind and the brain and the fact that your mental can completely incapacitate you to the point where you're having unbelievable physical symptoms, pain, sensations, nausea, headache, vomiting, everything from OCD or, you know, insert mental illness. And so the problem is that we don't hear about those cases. Those cases aren't talked about. You know, in fact, case in point, I didn't even know that OCD could get that bad until I got that bad. Nobody told me, right? I just realized that. Nobody said to me, listen, Ethan, you know, if you don't get better, you're going to end up pretty much almost psychotic and completely bedridden, and you may be sent to a home for the rest of your life. Like, I feel like I would have listened to that, you know? So I think there's that half of the community that is suffering just unbelievably and incredibly and awfully and unnecessarily. And I say unnecessarily because, and we're not talking about pandas here, which is pediatric onset. I'm talking about adult OCD and the gradual, it's a malignant disease. So it gradually, in these cases, becomes worse and worse. And what happens is there is a point at which you don't have to get worse. You can choose your own bottom, but you need to find a therapist that actually knows what they're doing. And Harvard did a study in the late 90s and determined that it took roughly around 17 years from diagnosis of OCD to receiving proper treatment. And it literally took me exactly 17 years to go to a therapist that said, oh, well, you need to do these things to get better. I'm sure that number is slightly lower now, maybe 14 or 15 years. But the sad part is I wouldn't have had to go through what I went through. And the people that get as sick as they do with OCD, that doesn't have to be them. Mm-hmm. But it is, because there's 90% of these therapists out there have no clue how to treat it. And so these people are not only spending their money, spending their family's money, spending hard-earned money, but they're spending money to get sicker. And that's just, it's just wrong. It really, really is wrong.
I want to clarify what you're saying here, because for some of my listeners, they may be going, well, how is that possible that a therapist could make it worse? And this is just what I've learned by being in the system and actually working with an OCD specialist, is that many times therapists will treat people that have OCD, and regardless of whether the person gets better or not, it's something to add to their repertoire. Okay, so you're looking up a therapist and it says, oh, look, it's like getting an injury for a physical therapy, and you're looking for a physical therapist. You know what I mean? Okay, I have an injury. Well, doctor, where should I go? Oh, okay, well, I'm contracted with this therapist, so just go there. You look on there and it says, yeah, they treat OCD. But I just did a speech today at the Sheriff's Department, CIT, and one of the things that I said is, if you or any of your loved ones have a mental illness, do not waste time with general psychologists. Go to a specialist, because you would not go to a general practitioner if you had cancer. You would go to an oncologist.
That's a great analogy. And the thing with mental illness is it's currently grouped. It's just, that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, if you had a foot problem and you went up, if you looked up doctor, then it, you know, then you go to doctor who doesn't have any experience with foot problems. I mean, that's basically what's happening with mental illness, is mental illness is being grouped into one thing when there's specific diagnoses and specific treatment for each diagnosis. But instead, it's, let me see here, I need a mental health professional. Oh, here's one, and they do everything. So, you know, maybe for initial diagnosis, just like a doctor can initially say, you know what, we found cancer. But at that point, you are then referred to a specialist. And that's the other thing, is that for most part, and look, medicine is all kinds of screwy. We know that. We know the system is broken. We know doctors, all that is messed up. But in general, you know, there is already in place a set standard where you go to a practitioner, they diagnose, and then they send you to whoever you need to go to. And that's just not the way it is with mental illness.
Right.
You know, for the most part, therapists, some therapists willingly know that they don't know how to treat it properly, and they treat you anyways. Some are completely oblivious and have never even heard of the modalities used to treat OCD, and they're not willingly taking advantage of you. They're unknowingly taking advantage of you. But there should be a set guideline and a set standard to say, okay, I'm not a specialist. I'm a general practitioner, but I've you know, done the research, and you've taken the tests, and you have obsessive compulsive disorder. I'm going to refer you to this doctor who treats this specific illness in the correct way.
And I think that it's not the fault either of the person who is newly diagnosed. And Ethan, I'm just going to give you an example of when I was diagnosed in the, when I was in the psych hospital. It was, oh, okay, look, now I have OCD. Okay, well, medication seems to work, but I'll just go back to my college and I'll just go to my therapist and tell him I have OCD. And what we did was, I had these unbelievably disturbing, dark obsessions, and I would talk to the therapist about them, and he would go, well, where do you think those are coming from? And what has happened in your life? And of
course, that's exactly the same questions I got. What happened to you as a child? I'm like, I don't know.
I know.
Played in the yard. I took showers. What happened to you as a child?
A trigger, and you go, oh my God, maybe these are true. It's horrible. And so it's not the fault of the psychologist a lot of the times, and it's not the fault of the consumer. It is a lack of information and education on here is what you do when you're diagnosed here. People probably don't even know that there are OCD specialists out there. I didn't know it.
I didn't know it either.
Fortunately, I was an advocate for myself. I have no idea how that happened. It just was 1998. I'm on the internet, whatever the internet was then. It took me 2 days, and I just kept searching and searching and searching my particular obsession, and then out pops Dr. Stephen Phillipson, who was a kind of pioneer for pure O.
love it.
Anyway, so, you know, I just, you know, I look at that, Ethan, and I feel lucky. I feel lucky I was able to advocate for myself and kind of drive my own therapy, but not everybody is that lucky, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, it's very sad because you do start to blame yourself. I know that I felt like a failure in therapy for 15 years because it didn't work. And every time I would go, what am I doing wrong? This therapy isn't working. I got to find a new therapist. And then I go to a new therapist and they would do the same kind of thing. And I would have hope. And then as we go through the process, my parents would be like, why isn't our son getting better? And I kept thinking it was me. It was me. All the while, the OCD getting worse and worse and worse. Look, you know, I had an interesting conversation with, Liz McInvale is an OCD spokesperson and very involved in the IOCDF. I had a very interesting conversation with her at the conference this summer, and she made a point of saying, and this is at least with pediatrics, that she's starting a program called Detect and Refer. And I think it's brilliant because the bottom line is we can't make all psychologists therapists, specialists, I'm sorry. We can't make all therapists specialist in OCD. But if we can educate all these therapists to first identify it, and then B, have a resource that they can refer to that are OCD specialists, we'd be way ahead of the game. You know, there, every doctor is, just like you said in the medical, in the physical disease world, not every doctor is equipped to treat cancer or foot problems or heart or lung. You know, they're specialists. And that's exactly how it works. The general practitioner detects it and then refers. And that's really what needs to happen in the mental health community. If the doctor is not equipped or a specialist in that area, they need to immediately say, look, I'm not your guy for this. You need to go to blah, blah, blah. Here's a list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that one of the questions that I want to get to, however, I know it's right, but we're going to probably take a commercial break here in a minute, and so I want to focus on that, would be, Ethan is very passionate, to my listeners, Ethan is very passionate about committing to therapy. And so before we really get into that, as a segue of what we were just talking about, let's just, in the next 3 or 4 minutes, Ethan, talk about why it is so hard to commit to the therapy that works for OCD.
Right now, these 3-4 minutes, or there's a commercial coming?
No, do that right now, and then we'll get more into the treatment aspect.
Excellent. You know, there are very few treatments that literally say to you, listen, we're going to need you to face your worst fear imaginable and stay in it. And you know, if you look at the treatment for cancer or the treatment for diabetes or anything else, you know, yes, it has side effects and they're awful. But it's sort of a passive treatment, right? I just have to muster the strength to go, yes, and I'm not a cancer. I hope I'm not offending anybody with cancer because I haven't had it. But at least it appears like this is going to happen to me while I sit here and fight this mentally, and I'm going to do what's necessary, and what I'm doing is scary, but it's still kind of a passive role while chemotherapy and medication take effect and do their thing. I hope I got that correctly. But mm-hmm. with OCD, it is 100% in your hands to implement the therapy properly, and you're giving yourself brain surgery. But in order to do it, you have to do the thing that scares you most, or the things that scare you most. And I mean, that is so far from easy, you know. And I remember when my therapists were saying in the beginning, when I first started getting exposure response prevention treatment, and they would say to me, listen, Ethan, we want you to hit your head. I'm like, I'm the one sitting in therapy right now. Like, you're telling me what the heck are you talking about? So it's like the thing that I've been avoiding all this time, they're now asking me to do. It is 100% terrifying. Like, I didn't understand how can you be asking me to do this? But in essence, it takes 100% commitment, and it really takes what I like to call blind faith, or radical faith, blind faith also, which is definitely when you're in the throes of the worst part of OCD. You know, you're not going to believe what anybody's saying because it's your brain, mm-hmm. and you don't know better than you. And nobody mm-hmm. knows better than you. You know, that's an awful conundrum with OCD, is that, you know, your brain is feeding you this information, and that your brain is telling you that these things are dangerous or uncomfortable or you shouldn't be doing them. So why shouldn't you trust it?
Mm-hmm.
And the therapy is telling you not only to not trust it, but
do
trust,
the opposite.
Trust me, the therapist. Hand over the keys. Let me do the thinking for you, and you just be the passenger for a while. And it is absolutely the scariest, most terrifying thing in the world. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, and I talked about this in my keynote, is that I was so sick, I was unable to do that on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the truth. You know, people would ask me, how did you do it? How did you do it? And I always really didn't like that question because I didn't have a real answer. And I would always say, like, oh, you know, it just, there was a moment where I realized, okay, I have to do this. But the truth of the matter is, I was so sick, I was unable to flip that switch on my own. So that's when sort of the intervention happened, and they kicked me on the streets. And basically, my choices were death or face my fears.
Right, rock bottom. Rock bottom.
That's it, rock bottom. But you know, the reason I'm so passionate about advocacy and the reason I'm so passionate about getting my story out there is you don't have to hit that rock bottom or even come close to that rock bottom. You know, you just need to know that it exists and it can be there, but you have the choice when you're not as sick as I was, having been born with it and never properly treated for 32 years. You actually have choices when you're 8 or 9 or 15 or 16 or 20, you know, mid-20s, and your family takes you to a doctor. You can have the choice to say, you know what? I choose life over OCD.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it comes down to.
Well, and I think that if this sounds confusing when to my listeners that don't necessarily understand ERP for OCD, it is what we do, Ethan and myself and people who have OCD for so many years, is you get to a point where you create these compulsions that are like a warm, fuzzy blanket. It's the fuzzy blanket that the person's trying to take away from you. And you're relying on that to make yourself feel better. And we're talking years. We're not talking, I have an obsession, I've had it for a couple of weeks, I don't want to let it go. I've had my obsession about barfing for 20-something years. So the idea that someone wants to take that fuzzy blanket away from me whenever I get thrown into an episode is no way. I'm not going to do that. Why? Because it seems easier to stay with the fuzzy blanket than to go against that and throw it away.
Yeah,
and,
the fear... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, the fear is familiar, and that's okay. You know, that's similar in life. Look, if you've never moved across country and you have an opportunity, it feels a lot better to stay where you are. It's safe. It's familiar.
Yep.
You know the people around you. But is it really the best decision for you in the long run? And the truth of the matter is, if you go outside of your box, if you go outside of your comfort zone, if you take that leap to go across the country, take that job, not know what you're getting into, and embracing that uncertainty, that's where the real magic happens in life. That's where the real success happens in life. And OCD is absolutely 100% no different. When you're comfortable, when you're familiar, when you feel safe, that's when OCD is at its strongest.
Absolutely.
And when you're willing to take that chance and walk out of that box, even though you don't know what kind of pain or suffering you're in for, the unknown, you don't know what it is, it's all unfamiliar. If you're willing to face that, the gains from doing that are way beyond your wildest dreams. I mean, I'm telling you 100%, my life for 32 years consisted of functioning. That was my goal. And that's what I thought life was about. I thought life was about, if I can just make my way out of bed and get dressed, then I've succeeded in life. So when people wanted me to get well, I was like, well, screw that. I'm already doing this. But then one day it hit me. In the middle of treatment, I started feeling something different. I started feeling happiness. And I was like, wait a minute. Life's not just about functioning. Life's about being happy and being present and experiencing. And once therapy became that for me, functioning was in the bag. I was already doing functioning. Now we're doing living. That's when I went, oh, I get it. This is what it's about. And then it just became exponential from there, you know, my growth.
It's the shift. And that's what we're going to talk about right when we come back. I think therapy is a great conversation for this particular interview, because Ethan and I both are really passionate about ERP. But we are going to head to a commercial, Ethan, for just a minute. But thank you for being here for the first half hour.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for my listeners for tuning in. Ethan is so full of knowledge and passion. It's just such a pleasure to have him on. And thank you for tuning in. We'll see you here in just a few minutes here at the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio at CosmicBroadcasting.com.
Hey, hey, hey! Welcome to another week of the Animal House.
Guys, our brothers from Bubble Fire Department are here. Last Wednesday, you guys saved Sarah's dogs. Tell us what it was like, and what is it like getting all this attention?
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, the attention's been overwhelming. We didn't expect. I mean, these aren't the first animals we've saved, so it's kind of surprising to us that these animals have created such a media.
Bubble Fire, you guys rock. All of you rock.
Thank you.
Yes, and are y'all as good looking as the guys here?
No, they're not.
Oh.
No.
You
pretty much got the cream of the crop right here.
Yeah. About as good as it gets.
Oh, God. Ladies, that was Nate. Stay away from him. He definitely has an ego. No, I'm kidding.
The Animal House, Tuesday, 5 p.m., only on CosmicBroadcasting.com.
It's good to be king or queen of your own home. Buying, selling, or leasing? Call Wayne King, licensed, trusted, and experienced real estate advisor in Colorado Springs. 719-331-2986. Wayne King has earned the trust of hundreds of clients by finding the right solution for them. Buying, selling, or leasing, Century 21, Curbo Realty, and Wayne King can make you king or queen of your own home. To work with a realtor that treats you like royalty, visit Wayne King's website, whereswaynow.com. Or call 719-331-2986. It's good to be king.
This is Shoshana French. Please tune in to my radio show, Simple Spirit, every Friday night, 5 to 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Each week, I will feature a new expert who will be teaching us how to nurture our mind, body, and spirit so that we can live a life that we love. Only here on CosmicBroadcasting.com. Again, that's Simple Spirit, every Friday night, 5 to 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Only here on Cosmic Broadcasting.
Voted a 2010 Best Italian Restaurant by SFGate.com readers, Palio di Asti offers a seasonally changing tour of authentic Italian cuisine. Serving up 2 hours validated parking and San Francisco's best downtown happy hour with $1 pizza from 4 to 7 p.m. It's no wonder that Palio di Asti is a longtime locals' favorite for lunch and dinner. Palio di Asti, 640 Sacramento Street, or on the web at PalioDiAsti.com.
Palio di Asti, authentic Italian cuisine in San Francisco.
Hi, this is Tony Caputo from KnowI'mWatchingFootball.com. I was Stacy's first guest when she began hosting the Connection Puzzle Radio Show and was her first guest on Cosmic Broadcasting when it launched. Congratulations on your 2-year anniversary and wish you many, many more. You're listening to CosmicBroadcasting.com.
Or you can simply follow us on Twitter. Follow us at CosmicBroadcast1.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio here with Chrissy Hodges at CosmicBroadcasting.com. We've been having a great discussion today with Ethan Smith about OCD therapy, why people resist therapy, why therapy is so hard. But before we get back,
697. So just getting in some push-ups during the break. Hold on. Okay, good. Here we go. Ready.
Thank you. I'm glad that we gave you some time. Before we get back to Ethan's workout schedule and his journey with OCD, I do want to say that if you are passionate about mental health, if you are 100% looking to eliminate the stigma of mental illness, and this is a movement that is going on right now, it's an uphill battle that we're fighting, and people like Ethan and myself and other advocates, organizations, family members that I have on every single week are doing everything they can to eliminate the stigma that goes along with mental illness. Stigma is something that I completely specialize in. It is the secondary part of a mental illness that can cause people to relapse. It can cause suicidal behavior. It can cause so many complications. And that is, I am an individual human and I have a mental illness, and I'm terrified of what the world thinks. I'm terrified of what I think because now I'm labeled mentally ill. This is what this show is doing, is making a positive difference. It's bringing real stories to life. Normal, everyday people. 1 in 4 individuals have a mental illness. 1 in 4. They're all around you, and you probably don't know because a lot of people are too scared to tell you because they're so afraid of what you will think of them. If you want to support this show and what we're doing every single week to break down stigma and put real faces and real stories to these powerhouse mental illnesses, please go to www.patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. My show is listener supported. The listeners are the people that want to break down stigma, that believe in what we are doing for the movement of making the stigma go away and creating more opportunities for people to speak up and get help. That's www.patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. You can give as low as $1 per show, and this is fully listener supported. Every dollar goes toward the show. coming back around to Ethan, I was just telling him that I wish we had 2 hours, but I feel like I have these incredible guests that come on with these passionate stories, and I just so glad you're here, Ethan.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. I actually just got a text. Somebody said my voice sounds sexy. So, and it's only because I'm just getting over a cold. So this doesn't last. You're getting special. Enjoy it, please.
We get the raspy, Ethan.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Ethan, I want to start off this half hour. I just put on Facebook, and so if you don't like my Facebook page, go to it right now, the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. I just started out by posting that Ethan Smith, quote, OCD is a disease, not a decision. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
OCD is not cool. When you were not cool sounding like, oh, look, I'm so OCD, so my desk needs to be straight. Drives me nuts, Ethan. Tell me about it.
You know what? It's twofold. It really is. In the beginning, you know, I can give you a personal example. I was working for a woman who I would kind of bow in and out of life with because my OCD ups and downs, I'd be functional and then I wouldn't be. And when I would be struggling, she would constantly tell me, you just need to have more willpower. You just need to be stronger. I have anxiety and I do blah, 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 blah every day. And look, I'm reliable. I'm successful. You're just weak.
And you need to learn how to be stronger.
Now, I've taken care of her. Anyway, so, you know, there's twofold in that. First of all, I'm not educated about OCD yet. So the first thing I say to myself is, wow, what's wrong with me? Why doesn't she understand? Because I can't do the things that she's saying. And it's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. And then you go into therapy and you believe that it's all about mind over matter. And that's sort of the common belief with everybody in regards to mental illness is, hey, if I can't see it, it's not real. If it's in your head, then it's something you can control. And that's not the reality of OCD or, you know, any other mental illness. The reality of it is it's a disease. And that woman, I almost said her name, that woman saying that to me is no different to me saying to a diabetic, come on, have your pancreas produce insulin. Let's go. Get your stuff together. You know? So it is very, very reassuring. We don't like to use that word too often, but it's very reassuring to learn that A, it's a disease, and B, it's not you. It's not you. It is not you. It would just be like saying, I'm my cancer. I'm not. I'm Ethan. Mm-hmm. And I have an illness or a disease, an OCD and ADD and ADHD and everything. It's all the same. It's all a disease. You are not your disease. It is not a decision. And so, therefore, it needs to be treated as such. And again, it goes back to what Chrissy said about awareness and education. Bottom line. Mm-hmm.
And another thing is that every disorder can be treated. And it's, you know, every individual is different. But as far as mental illness, there are treatments out there. There are breakthroughs that are being made every single day. But unfortunately, it is up to you to find the person, the specialist, the organization that is going to help you to get that treatment. And that is personal advocacy. And you know what, Ethan? I think what happens is that, and I even mentioned this in the speech today, when people are diagnosed with a mental illness, when I was diagnosed, I thought, I am not one of those people. Excuse me? I am not mentally ill. Look at all that I've accomplished. And I am not one of those low-life people that have a mental illness. And
yeah, I said the same thing to my therapist. Like when I first started going, I'm like, I've been on Dexter. I've been on I Love You, Man. I've done movies and TV shows. I'm not mentally ill. What are you talking about? You're crazy. Yeah.
But unfortunately, it is the perception that we put on it. And then when you're lumped into that category, it's really scary. So you're already at the bottom rung of your self-esteem. That's the way I look at personal stigma.
I'm feeling empowered at the moment. I want to bring something up. I am. And okay. and that is, I'm glad you're laughing at my sincerity. Great job, Chrissy.
I do all the time.
I know. It's okay.
I'm just waiting for a joke about my hair. That's all.
I was just waiting for you to say it. When I won. All right, you made it yourself. Anyway, now I don't even remember what I was going to say.
Oh, no, you were going to be sincere.
I know I was going to be sincere. It happened so rarely. You know what? Here's the thing. For those of you that are listening with OCD and you're not out or you haven't told people, you know, it was definitely a OCD for me was nobody knew. My parents knew and that was it. And it was extremely embarrassing. And it wasn't the person because of it, I wasn't the person I wanted to be. Only I believed I wasn't the person I wanted to be. As I've gone through this journey, the stigma of mental illness has changed for me. And in my mind, I so strongly believe, let me rephrase that. I so strongly love who I am now and my mental illness and the silver linings of what it's brought me that I would curse here, but I just don't give a blank beep. Can Len beep me? That'd be amazing. I just don't care what other people think when they hear the word mental illness because I know what it means and I know other people that know what it means. And that's all that matters to me. I know what I have to offer. I know what I've been through. I know where I'm going. And the people like that woman that I worked for, the people that would say, you know, I don't believe that, they can just do their thing. I don't need to put energy toward that. I don't need to think about that. Because I have to be honest with you. And this is the truth. Since becoming extremely vocal about my story, and let me tell you something, my parents, when I first started saying, I want to talk about what I've been through and I want to show video of me at my sickest, and they were like, you got to think about your future. You got to think about your career. And yep. For me, it was a no-brainer. It really, really was because I wasn't ashamed anymore. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about shame. It was about a source of pride. It was no different than a cancer survivor saying, I survived cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just don't care. Oh, that's what I was going to say. I do care. What I was going to say was, and as I've come out, I have to tell you, maybe one person has responded negatively mm-hmm. to my story. I like to call mental illness the great equalizer. We're all, you know, we have celebrities and big doctors and sports stars and musicians, and I've worked and dealt with all these people. But in my last 3 years, I'll sit down and I'll start talking about my advocacy. And the first thing to come out of these people's mouth is, well, you know, I actually struggle with something too. Or they say,
I know someone.
Or my sister. And I'm talking about like, and suddenly you're no longer an A-list actor. You're no longer a famous musician. We're human beings talking about a problem, talking about an illness, talking about a disease. And you'd be absolutely amazed at how many times when you open up the truth, how people are not only willing to hear you, but they're willing to embrace you. And it's that kind of education that needs to get out as well. And I'm not saying, you know, if you're sick and suffering, start talking about it. It's a process and you have to get mm-hmm. to that point. But I'm just saying that humanity at times surprises me. And in this case, this is one of those cases. That makes sense. So.
It's the vulnerability. And it's... I was saying today in my speech that all of us want what are we trying to portray to the world? Number one, we have our shit together. Oh, hi. Well, you know, Lynn just wrote me and said, feel free to curse away. So.
What? You didn't even tell me that. I'm like here going, and I don't give an S blank about it. Haha. Thanks.
Okay, well, if I can say it to the sheriff's department, I can say it to everybody. All right. We all want everybody to think that we've got our shit together. I mean, that's the truth. That's what we want to portray to the world. I mean, and I don't know where that comes from, but I just think it's some sort of innate quality that we want people to think that everything's together. When someone breaks that mold and says, you know what, man, I don't have it all together, and this is why, and I've got the stories to back it up, this is what's happened. People look at that and feel connected because then it gives them permission to say, okay, I don't have my shit together either, And so that way, it makes me feel more human.
And really, that's just be quiet, Chrissy. I'm going to talk now. And really,
you just want to curse.
Shit, yeah.
Go ahead.
I can't even keep a thought going. In reality, what is this all about? You good?
I'm here. What is this all about?
I don't know. I think we're talking about baseball. I think that in its essence, we all have this idea that we want to be perfect to people. We all have a facade. Mm-hmm. When we go out, we have a facade. We're, you know, and in reality, all we're really doing is just saying, hey, by the way, I'm human. And you know what? Mm-hmm. That's the reality of the situation. Mm-hmm. We have all this stuff going on in society where we're supposed to be the perfect weight and the perfect skin and the perfect this and the perfect that. And we've really gotten away from the fact that that's not reality. Reality is we're human beings. And as human beings, we are not perfect. We are imperfect people. Mm-hmm. And OCD is no difference. You are simply saying, hey, my name is Ethan Smith. I'm a human being. I have my good days. I have my bad days. I have my successes. I have my failures. But what I try to do, and this is the constant in my life, is it's not the amount of times I get knocked down. It's the amount of times I get up. And that's mm-hmm. who I am as a person, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think once you start getting rid of that perfectionist mentality that's so driven into our heads by teachers and parents and doctors and anybody who's in a position of authority, you know, you need perfect grades. You have to get into an Ivy League school. You need to be the biggest success ever. The minute you're just allowed to experience life, I didn't get to say this in my keynote, but there's a quote I love that one of my therapists told me when I was in therapy. And he said, you know, and I don't even think it's his quote, but whatever. He said, life isn't a problem to be solved. It's a process to be experienced. And I think it's the same thing as saying it's not the destination, it's the journey. But it's so mm-hmm. true. If you think of life as a process, then you immediately start to accept the good and the bad, the success and the failures, because it's a process. And in processes, it's trial and error till you get it right. And then something changes and you do it again. And that's all life is. It's not about the end game. It's what you do in the middle. And when you apply that to OCD, it works really, really well, because it's not about getting treatment right or doing it perfectly or being a perfect human being. It really is just about being human, having a disorder, a disease, an obstacle, and simply figuring out a way over that obstacle so you can mm-hmm. continue living. But continuing living doesn't mean, like, if you look to an expert, like, I'm an expert meditation, I'm expert yogi, this is the big guy from Tibet who does all the meditation, most of us think that this guy never worries, he never has a problem, he never has a bad thought, because he's an expert. I used to think that, oh, he was a guru of some sort, and I was like, I wanted to be him, because he teaches it. Who does the Power of Now, Chrissy?
Me.
Really?
What?
Who wrote The Power of Now?
I don't know. Am I supposed to know this? Why would you put me on the spot?
Just Google it while I'm talking. Anyway. But my point is, he was an expert in mindfulness. And I had it in my head that, wow, this guy must never worry. This guy must never have a problem.
Right.
He's just... And you know what? When you learn that that's not the reality... A good meditator isn't about clearing his mind. It's how many times he can come back to center. It's how many times he can catch him or herself wandering off and coming back. And that's really about OCD or dieting mm-hmm. or anything else you want to do in life. You're going to mess up. How many times can you get back to the middle and keep working it and working it until you get the results you want and then maintaining it? You can talk now, Chrissy. You have my permission.
That would be Eckhart Tolle.
Oh, thank you. Eckhart Tolle, thank you. I was about to Google it myself, yeah.
Thank you, Lynn.
Big shout out to the producer, Lynn Williams.
Yes, thank you. I would like to add to that this is what Ethan and I are talking about, and I think that I Ethan, you would probably echo my sentiments that it
echo
is
my
hard
sentiments.
To echo my sentiments. Echo. It's hard to get to a place of acceptance of yourself and your mental illness. Now I'm sitting here in an interview talking to you about how I've embraced my OCD and my mental illness, and I talk about it. 10 years ago, there would be no way in this world I would be talking about this. I've disclosed some of the lowest moments of and the obsessions and everything else of my life through blog, through the radio. This is not an easy place to be and to get to, and that's what I want to make sure if listeners are listening. Listening and thinking, oh, well, it's so easy for everybody else. It's not an easy place. And most of the people that come on to the show would agree with me that you go through a period of dealing with the stigma surrounding this and seriously battling it out with yourself.
And it's a process. It's not a formula. There's no, like, you're going to do this for X amount of time and this for X amount of time, and then you're ready to talk about it. It could be 4 months. It could be 4 years. It could be 14 mm-hmm. years. There's no right or wrong to this. And, I mean, screw 10 years. I was in a mental facility 3 years ago, and I was in the facility going, nobody's going to know about this. I'm never going to talk about this. And cut to 3 years later, and I'm showing myself literally at my sickest. You just don't know. But I totally agree with what Chrissy's saying, you know, if you're listening.
And no journey is the same. It took Ethan 17 years to get to a point of treatment. It took me a few months or 1 year to get the treatment I needed. However, I also spent the next 12 years in as a bottom dweller of personal stigma. It took 12 years. I was drowning in it. And I think that every journey is different, but it really is a choice. And I am going to say this, it is a choice. You get to a point where you say, I'm either going to choose to accept that I have a mental illness and love myself despite or not, and continue to stay saturated in the negativity of a perception that you're creating on your own. I like that.
I should
write that down.
You should. Hopefully somebody got it on, is recording this. But it's go ahead.
Well, we only have a few more minutes. I just looked down. Dang it. So this is what I'm going to do. Ethan, we just have a few minutes. I would like you to take 2 or 3 minutes to wrap up with just some final thoughts and where you are and what is some advice to people, especially surrounding the therapy issue. And what it is from your life that you can take and inspire people to go to therapy. It is worth it. And how to come out on top. And I mean on top as in loving yourself.
I think, first of all, nobody has to go where I went, and nobody has to go where Chrissy went, you know, our bottoms. Whether you just started therapy or you're in the middle of it or you're going over it again for the 5th or 6th or 7th time, you know, this OCD, oh, we can curse, you know, this OCD is a bitch. And I mean that it is nasty, nasty, nasty. And getting therapy is scary, scary, scary. But for those of you listening that are questioning it, you're scared, you're terrified, you feel like you have a handle on it, life is okay, whatever. I'm okay with misery. I'm okay with being half miserable. First of all, don't settle. Don't settle. Whatever you do, don't settle. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. There's a whole life out there in front of you, whether you're listening to this and you're 14 or you're 60 or you're 70. The quality of life I've had in the last 3 years is beyond any comprehension I could have imagined. I didn't know life could be mm-hmm. like this. But what it took were two things. It took from me, honestly, a willingness not to die. I wasn't willing to die. I wanted to live. And if I wanted to live, then what did that mean? What did that look like for me? And secondly, it took people not giving up on me. Because I look back at it, and there's a million times where I would have given up on myself.
Mm-hmm.
The combination of people not giving up on me, people not willing to let me go, and my desire to live, that combination will give you success in this. But in order to do that, you have to completely let go. You have to completely let go. And even if you don't believe whoever your therapist is, wherever you're at, if you don't believe it, just, you know, you, there's a saying, bring your body and the mind will follow. It's Chrissy talks about our passion. The truth of the matter is, I'm so passionate about this. I'm at a bit of a loss for words because there's so much I want to say that I can't get any of it out. You know, so the bottom line is this. There's 100% hope. I'm not just some guy just talking rhetoric. I would listen to people like me and sit there and go, well, he's not like me.
Yep.
He doesn't have what I have. He doesn't know what I know. You know, I'm different. I'm special. Guess what? If you're listening to this show and you have OCD, you're not special. No offense. But you're not. Were you going to say something, Chrissy?
Nope.
No. You're not special. Now, I'm not calling you the person not special. Your OCD is not special. So if you're sitting there going, well, you don't know what I'm, you know, you don't know what I'm going through, I don't care what you're going through. Mm-hmm. What I care about is you having an amazing life, and you can have it, but you got to work it.
And that is recognizing that OCD is fear-based. And OCD will tell you, and any mental illness will tell you, I am different. I am not able to be treated. And that is just simply not true. It's tough to swallow because you're terrified, but it's not true.
I agree. It's not true.
We are out of time, Ethan. However, I would love for you to come back on the show at some point in 2015 when and let's have a chat about stigma and personal stigma.
I think that works. I just want to thank you for having me and thank everybody for listening.
Ethan is such an inspiration. I am proud to call you a friend and a colleague and a fellow advocate for sure.
Oh, and real quick, I just want to give a shout out to Chrissy's parents. It was nice meeting you. I'll ask your permission for her hand very shortly. But at least I wanted to make an introduction and let you know that my intentions are real. Okay, go ahead, Chrissy.
We'll discuss that later, parents. However, please visit Ethan's website at ethansmith.com. Is that right?
Yeah, or hit me up on Facebook. Find me at Ethan S. Smith. That's probably better.
And head to my Facebook page where I have posted his keynote speech. Ethan is a huge inspiration to me and such a great friend and just someone that is, I'm glad to have in my corner. So thank you again, Ethan. Love you very much.
Love you too. A feeling's the same.
And thank you to all my listeners for tuning in today for my discussion with Ethan. We'll have him back on soon. And if you are interested in being a supporter of the show, that's www.patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. If you have questions for myself or Ethan, please contact me at ocd.chrissie@gmail.com. Have a wonderful week. I look forward to seeing you next week. You've been listening to the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio here at CosmicBroadcasting.com, where we're changing the way people view mental illness, one personal story at a time.